While the slides are coming up, the first one is disclosure, which I do have for Oxford University Press and John Wiley as well. Well, the next slide, which I'll go ahead and get started with, this is the disclosure to that are listed there, financial interests. I'll just say a little bit about this. Transnational corporations, multinational corporations, are not new in the history of the world. We've got a long history going back to the 1500s. North America was founded by corporations. Jamestown by an English corporation in search of gold. English indentured servants and African slaves brought to North America the colonies in the 1600s to produce tobacco and glass for export. But the global corporate interest and influence has grown due to a number of factors, including our neoliberal economic emphasis in the recent decades. So today I'm going to present a model to you, which I believe is the influence and the mechanism by which corporations have exerted global governance agency. And based on my sort of belief around this is that corporations are the most powerful and influential institution in the world. And this is kind of the model, which I'm going to go over in a little bit in each of these areas a little bit more in depth. I'm afraid because of the time that it's going to be data sparse as I started doing this, I had lots of good data backing each one, and as I got closer to recognizing I had a limited amount of time, I had to cut. So I'm presenting a model, which I'm sure you can find a lot of data to support this. So basically, I think the significant sectors of influence, I guess you could call them, as a global governing agency, is they have influence over governments in a variety of ways, which I'll go into a bit more. The business model itself, through multinational organization influence, foundations, through elite social networks, and the influence on public perception, business alliance, and coalitions and partnerships. So corporations join up into industry associations of various kinds and different names, manufacturing associations, for example, others that are more political, like ALEC, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard about. One of the major things that happens with these organizations is they, because they're very powerful, because of the clout they have together, is that they propose voluntary standards and codes for their products and for their practices and so on. And, of course, that those are voluntary, without monitoring, without enforcement. And in addition, they use this to avoid and say we're doing these good things already and to avoid enforcement, monitoring, and the actual implementation of policy and regulations by nation states. Coalitions with other health organizations, partnerships are talked about a lot today, and it's often from the viewpoint of being touted by corporations, that they have some legitimate role to play in policymaking in the health sphere. And those partnerships lend to that air of legitimacy. And they, through these partnerships, they have influence on the other partners because of their significant power and influence, and not the least of which is by the money that they can contribute to those partnerships, and thereby co-opting the other members of those coalitions and health organizations that they may join with. And it's not just with not-for-profits and community groups. Some of our multinational organizations like United Nations and World Health Organizations. The other aspect, which is probably the predominant one, is the business model that we're operating under. And the first is the aspect of wheel of that is a commodification. And that is commodification of every aspect of life, from labor to health to our forests to our oil, petroleum, whatever you can think of is the commodification of that for the privatization so that it can be sold for a profit. And a large aim of a corporation because of this profit motive is to avoid regulation which might, they perceive, might decrease their marketability, to avoid the taxation as well. Again, that contributes to the profit, and also helps them to avoid strong agencies that could regulate them because they're underfunded and don't have enough people to monitor and enforce regulations. They also become monopoly. We don't have much enforcement anymore of the anti-monopoly laws. But and the other aspect that's important, foreign direct investment in mobility. They have the ability to move anywhere they want to easily, and if a country decides that it's going to have some regulations against them, they can just pick up and move somewhere else, whether those regulations are related to worker health or the environment or just additional taxation. So that's one way. So with this particular model, they can control domestic economies, what some people have called the golden straitjacket, because countries believe that they're going to benefit from the corporation locating there, let's say, or investing in them, and then they don't want to impose too much in the way of restrictions or regulations because they know the country can easily, the company can easily move somewhere else. So through investments, the financial markets, and lack of regulation, countries become really beholden to the corporations, and so they're reluctant to alienate them because of fear of losing any benefits. And then, of course, we have the influence on a government through a number of different avenues. I've enlarged three of them here because I think those are particularly important, but it doesn't mean the others don't go on at levels that are very influential. But the election campaign funding, I'll talk about each of these a little bit more, and lobbying, and the revolving door where people from industry or specific corporations move into government agencies that have regulatory control over those industries, or they become staffers for congressional committees, which gives them lots of abilities, or and then turn and it goes the other way. And I'm going to talk about some of those. And I've mentioned a little bit about tax avoidance already. I'll show you some more about that. I'm not going to talk much about corruption and collusion, but that does go on at a variety of levels, including supporting violence in a number of countries. And then they can certainly, they do challenge the laws and the regulations through the court system with a lot of gains from that. So I just want to mention some things about lobbying. In the past 10 years, 5,400 formal congressional staffers have become lobbyists and 400 members of Congress. And in the recent 18 months, specifically related to the financial industry, you see that almost 1,500 former federal employees, including 73 former congresspeople, were involved in lobbying on the financial reform efforts that have gone on in Congress in recent years. And around the time of the 2010 election, where $471 million was spent on lobbying. Lost taxes, here are just two examples. In deferral of overseas revenue and accelerated depreciation, over 5 years, the U.S. lost $340 billion. And in these offshore tax havens, corporations set up a little office or post office box in the Caymans or someplace, and then they don't have to pay taxes. They shelter the taxes there. Or more directly, they set up their a branch in a country where the taxes are low, and they'll store their profits there and not import them into the U.S., but they'll charge off the cost, so they avoid U.S. taxes that way as well. So again, we have, because of these lost taxes, we have insufficient government funds to really regulate them, if your personnel for monitoring, testing, and enforcement. And here's an example. Wall Street, for example, in the financial industry, gets $6 billion in tax breaks, but the government only has $1 billion allocated for monitoring and accountability of Wall Street activities. The agricultural industry, it gets more than $7 billion in subsidies, but we only put $1 billion into food safety and inspections. Our significant multinational organizations have a significant role in supporting these activities of the corporations. The World Bank and International Monetary Fund sometimes buy the loans and the requirements they put on countries, nation states, for repayment of those loans, contribute to some of those things that I've talked about in terms of de-emphasizing regulations. They have to open up their markets to privatization of the healthcare systems, which may have been public. Their education system budgets are cut to be able to pay back the loans to these organizations. The one that's most directly visible in this is the World Trade Organization, which not only is dominated by corporations, essentially through their countries, and dominating the countries' involvement in the World Trade Organization, but it's also very, very secretive. And the process in the United States, through the U.S. Trade Representative Office, we have many, many advisory committees, and there's like 700 people on those committees, and we have less than a handful of anybody who comes close to representing the public health and medical field. Foundations. There are a number of things I can say about foundations, charitable foundations. One of them is that most of them, their funds come from either past corporate products and services, and they were set up based upon that, one of which product we are using today, or their current investments are coming from their dividends, the money that supports the foundation in an ongoing way, are coming from the dividends in their investment in corporations. Sometimes those corporations have had products and services that are very harmful to health. And through the large amount of monies that foundations have, they are able to set the public health agenda. That is, by putting their funding into specific areas. And those decisions are made by corporate officials and maybe their boards who, with very little community input, certainly at the grassroots level, it is not a transparent decision-making process, and it's not democratic. And again, some of the dangers of that is that through these contributions, they co-opt the people that they donate to. That is, they're not as willing to say anything if they're dependent upon the foundation's funding, much of anything, and certainly wouldn't be taking a very strong position against some of the more egregious acts that the corporation that for the revenues come from. And we've seen instances where we think that these foundations kind of serve as a Trojan horse for corporate interest because they typically fund things that are technological solutions, which are corporate products, and the corporation gives them an entree into that country, which they may not have had before, into the area of health. So I'm sure most of you are familiar with Mills and Dumhoff, where they describe this network of power elite that are connected through their family, their education, their class, and their wealth, and hold most of the world's wealth, and certainly in policy, they dominate policy decisions. They are isolated and disconnected from the mainstream of society, and they have more connections really to their international peers and within these networks than they do to the average citizens of their own country. And sort of they have this unconscious sort of common worldview and beliefs, and don't really have much understanding and perhaps even disregard for how their decisions and actions affect the lives of the public. And they have these little isolated exclusive conferences that they go to and have discussions among themselves and come up with consensus and suggestions, you know, recommendations for policies on all kinds of things. And I could name a few of those, which you would recognize the names very easily, across all kinds of the political spectrum. Now, this is just one example. I can't spend enough time for you to really read all of this, but this is just to give you sort of the quantity of influence. This is a map of Goldman Sachs' connections to the TARP financial industry bailout that crossed the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and the Obama administration. A very high-level decision-making that occurred for people who had direct, and you know Goldman Sachs was very involved in that. Public perception, these are just some of the ways that corporations are able to influence the public perception and have been for many, many years. Their corporations are very skilled at this, and they have a lot of resources, and they directly control a lot of these communications channels whereby they can influence the public's receptivity to the corporate for-profit market-based consumer ideology, and which has become really ingrained in the subconscious of the public so that they don't even bring a critical analysis to any of these messages, or most of the public don't. And policymakers also may not even be aware that they're doing this because it's so ingrained. They just act on this ideology sort of out of subconscious and reflex. And those decisions that they bring to decisions about a healthcare system or environmental pollution or jobs, whatever it may be, they bring that perspective to it. And when I say education, because some of us here are in higher education, and that definitely has an influence and a role in even growing more and more in the field of higher education, particularly because our budgets are cut. Many universities now, public universities, are supported only about 25-30% by the state. And so we have an ideology or public perception then that you're all very familiar with in terms of business is private and it's freedom, and therefore it's good, and government only interferes and brings along anti-tax. And an aspiration that people have that they don't object to this too much because they have this illusion that they can also become wealthy, even though data shows that even the one generation to the next anymore, there's not really that much progress in terms of moving up the social. And so it's made us really more consumers in our society rather than our citizens' role, generally demoralized and passive. We've got a shift in the center, polarized, but there is still some engagement and mobilization and revolution, even as we've seen in the last year in many places around the world. And we do have some support for this position of examining corporations, that many people believe that corporations have too much power and influence, particularly here in Washington, D.C., and that there's not being enough done about it. A variety of solutions, including we need a global governance organization, perhaps some existing ones with some modifications for more accountability, more monitoring, and civil society participation. Some things that countries who are low income are allying themselves together and sometimes able to do something about this. We have numerous human rights policies that we could enforce. But I believe that the priority should be trying to redress the effects of the Citizens United decision, because I believe it's foundational to all of that. This is just an example of some of the top corporate donors overlaid on our Senate chamber to show you some of the influence. There are some that donate predominantly to both sides, some to the Democrats and some to the Republicans. In the first half of 2011, the left-leaning have raised only $76 million versus the conservative super PACs of $17 million. Expected in the 2012 election to spend that $8 billion will be spent. TV stations are a large part of that, and they expect to recoup a lot in advertising. So what are they getting for the money? Well, there's always the question, we really don't buy votes, but when you look at the analysis in terms of donations and campaign contributions that various congressional leaders got, they get a lot more money from those groups that they support than they do give to those that that oppose their position. And this is an example of the oil industry and, again, Wall Street, TARP, and the recent financial reform. There's a number of counteractions nationally. The Fair Elections Act now has been reintroduced. There's a constitutional amendment, again, introduced to allow Congress to limit corporate spending. There's a number of other acts. Some people are calling on the Justice Department to investigate some Supreme Court justice involved in the Citizens United decision for their conflict of interest and failure to disclose. And there's been some calling Congress for an investigation as well. A lot of direction action going on in the community. A number of states have introduced resolutions and laws, actually some of them passed, related to trying to redress Citizens United. Same thing is happening at numerous cities across the country. The role of public health, I'll just focus on this kind of end here, is that this is the model that you've seen from the social determinants of health coming out in lots of different publications. If you look at the right-hand side, this is where we usually focus public health and medical care. And corporations, we talk some about them having influence on the health system and on individual behaviors like tobacco. But they have a direct and really important and strong influential role upstream, back as the structural determinants of the social determinants. And that's why I think we really need to address directly the entity of the corporation in our society rather than just one individual corporation or country at a time. One particular issue at a time. So lots of roles for public health profession. We need to prioritize this issue, our curriculum, our policies, and including, I want to say, conflict of interest, not only our individuals, which we have to disclose here, but APHA, for example, over the last year, our executive board voted to approve General Electric and Bank of America as financial partners of our organization. And you know what the statistics are about a little bit of taxes and the damage that those two groups have done to our economy and our nation. I want to just add one thing here. This is from the Occupy Wall Street. That as advocates, we need to take care of ourselves and our community. One of the research areas that I work in is contemplative practices. We know that they have an influence, re-energizing us and invigorating us, but they have been shown to actually change the brain so that we can be more compassionate, empathetic in our actions. So I would just conclude by saying that I think that over and over again, issue after issue, year after year, from one session of Congress to another, from one president to another, one ballot initiative or referendum to another, we fight the same fight over and over again against the same opponent. You identify whatever your key issue is that you focus on, and almost every issue in public health, the corporation is the opposition, and that we really have to take strong action collectively in forming coalitions with other organizations working on this issue to really take back democracy for we the people. Thank you.